Last year, I had the opportunity to list my Montecito guest house on Airbnb. This was part of a special project that Airbnb spearheaded to build connection and to make the world feel a little less lonely. It was such a pleasure to get to know my Airbnb guests over dinner and share my home with them so that they could rest and recharge on their trip. But typically, the beauty of hosting on Airbnb is that while you're away, someone else can get as much joy from your home as you do. Being a host on Airbnb is great for those who travel frequently, have extra space, or own a seasonal home. If you've stayed at an Airbnb, you know the unique experience it offers. And now you can share that same experience with others in addition to earning additional income on the side. To learn more about hosting on Airbnb, head to airbnb.com/host.
When you are pioneering anything or introducing new ideas to the culture,
you get criticized.
You do?
Yeah. Did you hear about that?
I didn't find the one. I found someone I respected and we made it the one.
In a sort of longing kind of view of love, people understand each other as if by magic.
Nothing in itself is addictive on the one hand. On the other hand, everything could be addictive if there's an emptiness in that person that needs to be filled.
I now know that nobody changes until they change their energy. And when you change your energy, you change your life.
I'm Gwyneth Paltrow. This is the Goop Podcast, bringing together thought leaders, culture changers, creatives, founders and CEOs, scientists, doctors, healers and seekers, here to start conversations. Because simply asking questions and listening has the power to change the way we see the world. Here we go. My guest today is Cara Delevingne. Cara is a model, actress, entrepreneur, and activist, which is to say she's an incredibly passionate and curious person whose interests are as varied as her job titles. Cara joins me today to talk about her experience working in a high-pressure industry at such a young age and what it's like to be a recovering people-pleaser. We talk about being a role model in the LGBTQ community and her hopes for anyone following in her footsteps. It was such a pleasure speaking with her, and I'm excited to share the conversation with all of you. I'm so amazed by how much you've been able to accomplish. And
coming from you, I just find that a very strange thing to say, but thank you.
You know what? No. What I'll say is, at your age, I had accomplished a lot sort of quantitatively, but you have started the force of changing culture so much earlier than I did. I was just trying to be good and nice and like do everything everybody said. And it's just so cool to see you embracing all of that life force and being empowered to try so many things and to be successful at so many things. And I think also because at my age, when I was your age, not to sound like a grandmother, but not yet. We weren't allowed to be more than one thing. And yeah. You embody this, you're this incredible woman who's more than one thing. So talk to me about how you started your journey.
It's so funny because obviously I've followed your career ever since I can remember. And to me, you had already done so much at such a young age. And it's just funny you saying that to me, but also because I think in my mind, I was always the person that kind of just was trying to be really nice and trying to kind of do the right thing or prove myself to someone or make someone proud, and it wasn't really necessarily myself because I was just trying to make someone happy or trying to prove people wrong or try and gain love from people that I don't really necessarily think that I needed to gain love from. It all came from a place of maybe not quite a sad place, I think, almost in a way, or a place of feeling quite lost and confused and alone and trying to find a sense of belonging. And I really think I found that in kind of discovery of myself through the jobs and through the different characters or putting the different roles on or the masks that I was kind of putting on. I really discovered a lot about who I was, or actually who I wasn't, I suppose. Mm. But really, for me, I am definitely I put on so many different hats. I have a lot of characters within me, kind of different roles, whether it's in gender or sexuality or different things that I enjoy to do. And it really annoyed me about how through definition of gender or where you come from or what family you're brought up into or where you're from, that you're put in a box or told to be a certain way or given all these rules and boundaries. And I hated that because I was like, that isn't a shape that I fit into. There isn't a box. There are no limits to what kind of I feel like I can do, or at least I don't want there to be limits. I want to push myself and kind of teach everyone that the capacity that you have is limitless. Everyone has such a vast capacity and everyone has what they kind of need within them already. And that there's so much fun and play to be had, that kind of childlike thing of the imagination and how much that you really can explore and do, as long as you can kind of just believe in that and enjoy it and have fun, which is why I kind of feel extremely lucky and grateful to have had all these opportunities. All the things that I do, it is also very much based in kind of childlike creativity, creation, imagination, because still I'm just such a kid at heart. There was school and stuff. I didn't fit into that box of being academic. And I always thought I was stupid and dumb and couldn't do well because I was judged on grades and things like that. And it really came to a point where I was like, God, that's got nothing to do with how smart you are or what you can give to the world.
It's just one set of metrics that all the grown-ups seem to have agreed upon. I see that now with kids and friends and the incredible sense of almost disembodiment that it gives these kids, that they have one experience of who they are in their own brain and then a completely different experience in trying to fit into this academic world. And I do think, although I do think there really have been great strides made, their society still is telling kids, this is really how you want to be, right? This is all well and good, but this is kind of the box we all want to see you fit into. Yeah. And that's why it's so beautiful. You're such a great role model for my daughter. How did you go from being a pleaser to being more of an iconoclast and getting that bravery?
I am still a pleaser, though. I'm still learning and growing so much when it comes to just saying yes to people and everything or trying to please people. I think there's also a point where it comes where, like, I will, even if I'm doing like a movie role, let's say, or something, where I will push myself so far and can kind of don't really see the, like, also because with it coming, with being a kind of like artist, let's say, there also comes a point where it's like, oh, it wasn't good enough unless it hurt, like unless I really got, like unless there was pain involved, unless there was like something, especially with stuff like that with stunts, like I'm a bit of an extremist when it comes to that. So I am still like that, but also it became a point where instead of pleasing people, I just was deeply unhappy. Mm. I was so unhappy and I wasn't following my truth. I wasn't, especially when it came in terms of being like a model, let's say, that whole thing of just being, having to fit into the box of that feminine, very like, you know, for me, I'm an androgynous person, definitely, but like, I love being a woman and dressing up and doing all of that. But I also love just like being a bit of a rough and tumble, quote unquote, like, but when I say gender, like a man, you know what I mean? There's so many different parts of that and so many things I was able to discover within that. And it's constantly changing. Like I feel so much more comfortable in the fluidity of what it is to be just a human and also what it is to be an animal almost, because that's what we are, to really trust in your own instincts. And the more I began to believe that I knew, like, again, when you talk about like fraud syndrome, everyone has that. But the more I began to believe that my own instincts were right, that actually you can kind of take a step back from certain situations and really follow your heart, follow your gut, the more I kind of was able to have faith in those decisions I was making. But again, I don't know what I'm doing. No one does most of the time.
Nobody knows what the fuck they're doing. It seems as though, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems as though modeling was kind of how you got that original platform, springboard to go off. So how did it start? Who found you? Were you like walking down the street when you were 14?
I always also find that whole thing about funny where anyone goes like, who discovered you? Who found you? And it's like, wait, but didn't I find myself? Well, obviously I'm going to be really thankful for everyone who gave me this opportunity to pay homage to those people who definitely kind of were able to give me the platform to start my career. But also I think with being young and something that I always try to highlight and not to kind of shit where you eat, don't bite the hand that feeds you. But I also wanted to highlight the world that is also modeling and the fashion industry, and how, especially when you're young, with agents and people who can very much take advantage of people, especially with any industry, but with fashion, it's kind of fueled by insecurity. It wasn't a great job for me, beginning wise, for my mental health, I think, because already at that point, growing up when I was younger, I had a lot of kind of mental health, whether it was depression and I was on meds and stuff when I was at school. But that was all to do with kind of being very hard on myself about not being clever, quote unquote, clever, being good with grades and stuff like that. So kind of going into modeling, it was just another place where I was never going to be good enough. It was kind of all of those things of never kind of feeling like I was good enough. And in that point in my life, I wasn't in any way ever going to be successful as a model, because I didn't think I was one or looked like one at all. But again, it was kind of that thing where it was a challenge. And for me, challenges are really great. Anything that I'm scared of, whether it's heights, or there are so many things I used to be scared of, but I conquer all of those fears just because you can. And it's telling yourself you can't. I think can't is one of the worst words in the world, because as soon as you keep saying I can't do something, you just limit yourself straight away. So that kind of started. And I think Burberry was the first job I did. But I worked for a long time before I really made any money or did anything. But I just kind of kept at it, because also I was so lucky to be able to do modeling at all, to be signed to an agency. It was both of those things, but it really was the biggest surprise in the world. But I really thank Christopher Bailey, because he was one of the first people that was like, I don't want to look at your pictures or what you've done before. I want to know what you like doing. And I was like, well, I'm a model. But then he was like, no, but what do you actually like doing? And I was like, what? You care about what I like to do? Yeah, well, I really want to act. I really enjoy playing music. I play the guitar on the job. He was kind of, he went past the point of just what people look like. And it was the first time that campaign that I did first, it was with a great friend of mine called Jordan Dunn. And it was the first time they'd ever used an African-American model before. And it was really crazy, because at that whole point, it didn't seem that long ago, but he was kind of changing the way that kind of industry was moving. And I really thank him for that, especially because in his last season it was all about the LGBTQ community. I really think he did a lot. So he was one of my big heroes at that time.
I want to ask you, you just talked about being kind of that challenges being sort of you being magnetically drawn to challenges and to do like to conquering things that are really hard. And I'm just asking because I have a similar thing, and I'm wondering, do you think that that's just intrinsic to who you are, or do you think that comes from some kind of injury in your childhood?
Yes, I would say, yeah, because I think, because part of life for me is the extremes of it, the kind of the highs, the lows, the fear, every feeling, every emotion is very, like, that's what I feel like living is almost. But I definitely feel like it probably came from something, my childhood, whether it was trying to, when I say survive, that's the wrong thing, but to cope, to wanting to look after people, but also not really knowing how to look after myself either, because I'm still learning how to do that, I suppose. You know, I'm way better at kind of caring for others than actually knowing if I'm okay ever. It definitely is very much in the nature of who I am, though, wanting to prove myself wrong and again try and change the narrative, and learning that the stories that we tell ourselves make you sick. The kind of stories of, oh well, this is, well, because this happened, you kind of get, I think Oprah said it, you get addicted to your own story, which is kind of wrong, because the story and the things that happen in the past can really change what you can do in the future in a bad way. Because if you get too stuck in those things in the past, then you think too much in the imagination about the future instead of living in the present and just being like, well, all of those things can change and I have the power to change all of those things.
Do you have certain tools or practices that you use to kind of let go of the past and to be in the present?
So obviously I started doing this kind of partnering with you guys and Puma, doing these kind of 5-day programs. The first one I just did was with my teacher, my yoga teacher, Colin Dunsmere, who is English. He's in London, but I started doing that when I was 18. I've known him for 10 years. Wow. And that was just at a point where I was so numb to my own feeling and emotion. And I was just kind of running. I live kind of at 100 million miles per hour. That's who I am. My nature is very like fast and run. And like people would say, it's like ADHD, but I'm very much like, can be thinking a million different things at once. But yoga really taught me the power of feeling, because I'm a very sensitive person. And I found that very hard to accept, because to me, sensitivity was the worst thing in the world. I hated feeling so much and I hated feeling so deeply. But that is a gift, and it's a gift, and it's also a curse, but it's also something which has given me so much of the strength and makes me who I am. But really learning that emotions and the depth of those emotions are so beautiful, to be able to accept those, to really embrace those. I never ever accepted or expressed that I was angry or expressed that I was hurt. I found it so hard to kind of learn how to express emotion. And it really taught me that. It really taught me to sit in it and to face it instead of kind of running away from those things or destroying myself because of them. You know, being able to externalize and be open about emotion instead of just internalizing all of them, because that brought me so much sickness. But as long as you can kind of express all those emotions in everyone, to be able to, whatever it is, whether it's exercise or for me, yoga, being able to take time for yourself in, you know, the morning and the evening. And it's not yoga in the sense of the kind of exercise side of it where you can really push yourself. It's just connecting with your breath and being able to slow down.
I can't wait to do this.
I know, I'm so excited. But that's really what it is. Yoga can be really incredible in this. So many different, but I always said I'm not good at yoga. I'm not very flexible. My body doesn't move in ways that like I would like it to, but it's more just the simple movements of just connecting to your breath and just little movements in your body and how much you can really change within.
I mean, all the power is in breath, right?
Oh, it really is. Because you don't realize how much you don't think about it. And you're like, oh, why am I having an anxiety attack? This is so weird. And then you suddenly realize you're like shallow breathing beyond, and you're literally about to be sick. And you're like, oh, if I just breathe deeply, it helps so much. Because I remember when I discovered that, I'd be backstage at a fashion show in the middle of all these people running around. And I'd be sitting there in my kind of with my shoulders up by my ears because I was so stressed out, but trying to do yoga in the middle of a fashion week behind backstage. But how much you can actually, if you take 10 minutes, you can shut out all of this stuff around you. I mean, I wouldn't have really been able to survive in it that long if I hadn't found yoga, really.
Last year, I had the opportunity to list my Montecito guest house on Airbnb. This was part of a special project that Airbnb spearheaded to build connection and to make the world feel a little less lonely. It was such a pleasure to get to know my Airbnb guests over dinner and share my home with them so that they could rest and recharge on their trip. But typically, the beauty of hosting on Airbnb is that while you're away, someone else can get as much joy from your home as you do. Being a host on Airbnb is great for those who travel frequently, have extra space, or own a seasonal home. If you've stayed at an Airbnb, you know the unique experience it offers, and now you can share that same experience with others in addition to earning additional income on the side. To learn more about hosting on Airbnb, head to airbnb.com/host.
You worked on a yoga exercise clothing line with Puma, right? Or you say
Puma. I did.
Puma.
I don't know what I say. I say it's like
in England. I feel like they say Puma.
I say Puma.
Okay,
but
good.
It's also like I say my name differently depending on each country that I'm in. So I don't really know. We've done this incredible line. I've been working with Puma for a really long time, but yoga's always been a real passion of mine. And what I'm really excited about is kind of going towards with everything I do now, but going towards more like a sustainability angle, really trying to go with the more eco-friendly materials and really kind of change these kind of conglomerate, let's say, but like big brand things to kind of go towards more of an eco-friendly direction, because that's where the world needs to go.
Young consumer wants as well, for sure.
And what everyone should want and strive for, because it also just consciously when you kind of educate yourself, which I think is the most important thing. I think for me, I was very ignorant in what I kind of thought about the environment, because again, living in ignorance in this world is kind of, it's not, it seems like it's bliss, but it's not, because you're just, you just don't know what the kind of effect is. You can kind of feel it if you're every day, day to day, you feel the weight of what's going on in the world, but you don't know. And so until you really find out, and I really thank my best friend Christabel, who I started Eco Resolution with, which is this incredible platform where you kind of make a resolution to not be perfect, because no one can be. And it's also okay to be a hypocrite, because everyone is in a way, but also to try and every day choose to make a better decision when it comes to whether it's what you wear, eating meat, recycling, anything. And also just to educate yourself and other people. Now we just turned that into a charity, which is really incredible, called Earth Initiative Earth, where we're going to be doing courses for people, free courses online, where people can learn how to kind of do more grassroots things in their communities. It's going to be really exciting.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. How do you go about getting a big corporation to diverge from their supply chain and encourage them to use sustainable fabrics and practices, et cetera?
Well, it's quite hard, but I think that kind of started more in beginning to choose who I worked with, because there was a lot of things that I'd done previously which were fast fashion, which I can't take back now, and obviously I do regret. But learning the jobs that I did to kind of take a better direction in what the jobs were, and then the companies that I do really care about and who do believe in the same things as me in terms of wanting to be better, I think that's how it starts, is wanting to make those decisions and then really kind of having conversations. Because when I started kind of having a longer relationship with Puma and getting involved more behind the creativity aspect and getting more, because obviously now I'm doing a lot in terms of the different design processes and learning where all the things come from and where the factories are and how we can make it better. And then the packaging, it's just, it's beginning to have those conversations. And then kind of straight away, them wanting me to do a yoga line, I was like, okay, well, if we're doing something to do with yoga, it has to be sustainable. Like, we have to work on the sustainability. We have to work on the materials and where it comes from and who's making them and the dyes. There's so much to do, whether it's not just the materials, but also the dyes that are involved, whether they can be clean dyes, if they're created in a better way, you know, and who's creating them and where they're coming from. It's just, it's a huge undertaking, but something that I think this is just the beginning, which I think is the best part. You can only just start trying, and then trying is the first thing, but then when you really take it into action, that's when it all starts to get exciting.
And for anybody who's listening, we'll be able to see all of them, because I hope you're going to wear them all while you take us through this 5-part kind of reset. What are you going to teach us? Yoga?
So I'm doing I'm only doing the first one. I'm kicking it off with Colin, and then we have an incredible Puma trainer called Amanda Robinson's, who's going to be doing more like the hit and the bar in the clothes as well, but more of the exercise. But in the first one, I will be wearing, as I am wearing now under my robe, but I'm wearing part of the collection. And this is also the one that I'm wearing now. It's all, the materials are all, the dye is all, it's all sustainability friend, well, sustainable. And yeah, just definitely more eco-conscious.
I want to ask you about... So, because you seem to have this incredible passion for acting and embodying other roles and other characters, and you've been in some amazing things like Paper Towns and Suicide Squad. Mm-hmm. And do you feel like is there a lot more that you want to be able to express through that? And what kind of roles are you looking to do?
For me, it's, acting is a really... Oh, I love it so much, but as well, like, I always wanted to go to drama school and be able to really learn the kind of craft behind it. I always loved acting, even when I was a kid, but unfortunately, because I wasn't great at school, I couldn't go to drama school, which was sad, but I was able to do these kind of courses. But the problem is because I am a very sensitive person, and I also had quite an issue with identity and who I was, and I found it very easy to get way too wrapped up in roles. To my detriment.
You went all Daniel Day-Lewis on
us. Yeah, but I'm not a method actor for sure, but like, I stick in the accent, and then I fall so deeply in love with everyone who I'm with acting wise, but then not like who I'm with, but who I'm acting with in terms of the whole cast and then the crew. And then I get so, I love the person that I'm playing so much, even if it's someone bad, but I fall so, I find such an attachment to that. And then by the end, everyone leaves. And then it's like my abandonment issues come. And then I have no idea who I am. And then I'm like, oh my God. It's like a whole midlife. It's like a crisis every time I finish a role. It's really, it's kind of crazy. But I'm getting better at it. As time is going by, I'm definitely being able to separate myself a lot from it. But it's one of my favorite things in the world. But now as well, kind of, I never really worked with women that much. I always kind of worked with these male directors who were great, who are incredible, and kind of always playing quite a kind of heteronormative storyline. I want to just change that. And this is the, I'm doing a short coming up really soon. Well, it's not a short, but it's all working with female directors and female writers. And it's, look, I think it's important, but it's also just something I've never done before. And I think in terms of my career, is also just something I really want to be highlighting more and not doing kind of, I love doing the action movies and all of that kind of stuff, but to be able to kind of do more of the really intense, smaller projects that kind of mean more to me as a person, I think, which is really exciting. And also just because I love, I've just started directing stuff, just small things like music videos, but just, and because I used to write a lot as well, but kind of getting more into terms, like doing more when it comes to getting behind the camera and learning, producing things.
Let's take a quick break to talk about one of our partners.
Tumi has a soft side. Discover their new Acer bag collection in its pillowy pleats, satin finish, and crescent shape. Acer is the bag to carry for your 9-to-5 and the 5-to-9 plans that follow. Versatility, after all, is Tumi's signature. Shop the full Acer collection on Tumi.com or at a Tumi store near you.
Okay, let's get back to the conversation.
And where does music fit in? Because you're really talented. Is it true that you were on Fiona Apple's last album?
Yeah, in the most recent one. It was really, I love her so much.
Oh my God, she's so amazing.
Oh my God, she's the best. She is and always has been one of my favorite female or just male, either way, artists ever. Her raw, not just talent, but emotion and the way she expresses it. Like I could cry just talking about it. It's one of the most incredible things. I've known her for a while and I've seen her work. I've been able to be there when she's working. And also I personally find music very, very personal and also very hard to do because it's acting, at least I can hide behind, like if someone doesn't like a role I do, like it's not me, so it's fine. You don't, it doesn't mean you hate me, because music, if someone doesn't like my music, then it's like they hate me and I have a real problem.
So vulnerable.
I hate it when people don't like me, so it's an issue. So I find that hard. Like I there isn't a lot of space for music because I'm kind of so busy, but I'll always do it. I always write, I always play. I feel like it's something I'm going to be able to do later in life because I'm still very hard on myself and still care too much about what other people think, probably still. I mean,
it's incredibly vulnerable to
even
just singing, even if it's not your own
song.
I mean, I remember I had to take a bunch of singing lessons, or I wanted to, because I was doing this movie about country.
Yeah.
And doing this TV show Glee kind of at the same time. Uh-huh. And I had this amazing singing teacher in London and named Carrie. And she, for probably the first 3 or 4 lessons, when I would really start to sing, I just would cry. And it was so embarrassing. And I just thought, oh my gosh, I can't, there's like nothing. I don't know if it's putting emotion behind the words or the vibration or the sound that you're making or what it is. And I thought, This is so hard. I mean, I had to be, as you say, vulnerable as characters before,
yes.
But not, I found it so painful, excruciatingly vulnerable.
I used to do a lot at school, even when I was quote unquote doing someone else's song in music, it was almost impossible not to connect to it so deeply because it is coming from a place inside where you can't really hide in music. You can't. it kind of all comes out. No matter if you're doing another accent, doing a voice in the song, it's still very impossible to kind of hold back almost. Like I would used to sit on the piano. I'm not trained in piano. Like I used to play guitar and drums first, but I started really learning more about writing music and writing more music. Just the incredible things about just playing any instrument, even if you aren't necessarily good at it. But I would just sit on the piano and play one note and just over and over again and just start to, it's almost like you have some sort of exorcism. And I would start singing and crying, and then it's like, oh, and then you just stop and you're like, what the hell just happened there? It's almost like something completely takes over and you just let go of so much. But
those artists that you were listening to when you were a kid.
Oh my gosh. Who were the artists? I mean, the first concert I ever went and saw was the Spice Girls. I just thought they were so incredible. They are.
They are.
Incredible. They are still incredible. Spice Girls. But how much they meant, and I think how much, especially with female artists, how hard it was for a long time for female artists to work together. And I think for me, the Spice Girls represented so much of obviously quote unquote girl power, but like women having fun, working together, lifting each other up, inspiring each other, being together, the messages behind the songs. But, you know, I didn't really grow up. My parents weren't super musically inclined in terms of old music. So for me, pop music was a big thing. And I also found like, especially with kind of rap music like Eminem or like Notorious B.I.G., people that wrote kind of rap, but that really meant so much about what they were doing and the emotion and the pain behind it was so incredible to me. And then I really started learning a lot more about old music and all these incredible female artists like, I don't know, PJ Harvey and Bjork, like Erykah Badu or Fiona Apple, Lauryn Hill, Alanis Morissette, like all these really incredible female artists where there was just so much, oh, that kind of like Janis Joplin. You watch all these documentaries, and especially in that time where the musicians were just so free, whether that was the drugs or the moment of the time they were in, but how much they just let themselves go on stage.
All of those women, what they have in common is incredible, like permission they gave themselves to just be so visceral and
so visceral.
Let their id out.
Exactly. And that's also something you can really kind of take on for yourself as well. Because everything now is just, it seems so much more, not contrived, but that everything, there's so much control now. Everyone has such a thing or a problem with the control, how much everything needs to be predetermined or set up or needs to be kind of just being able to just lose control now is almost the way that, lose control in a good way, but you know what I mean?
It's a really good point, actually. It's almost like the music today is, the style of it is so produced. And
it's so produced and so
produced. And what that does is sort of contain and polish and contain and polish and
totally.
Yeah. So you don't have, I wonder too, if that type of woman, like if you're wrestling with identity or sexuality and you're seeing these women who are just like so fully embodying their essence, it must be a relief.
Total relief. I think as well, there are some people that I also think there are a lot of people now who, like musicians now, like you look at someone like Billie Eilish, and I always thought someone like Rihanna was really incredible, because no matter if the kind of, when you listen to the recorded music, whether it was quite contained, but when you see these people live, or like Adele, let's say, it's like how they can just do the song, but then be very much themselves in between. You know, you go to listen to Adele's concert, and she'll just stop and go, oh, sorry, I fucked that up. Let me start again. Oh, darling. Like, and just talk. And she's so herself. And again, that seems like, and especially when you look at the music like hers, it's so emotional. And so, and it's kind of being able to kind of have that at the same time is also, because now you look at anyone, but they have so many people in their team and so many people that are involved in making these people who they are, where it's that sometimes you just need to let those people be who they are, because artists need that space to kind of do whatever it is instead of kind of always having to, you know, it's just so much pressure now. It's a lot on anyone.
When you're in the public eye, it's, yeah, know, it's a whole other.
Even if you're on the public eye, but even if you're not too, it's just,
Well, that's what I was just going to say, you know, and observing my children, you know, I think social media has sort of done this to everybody.
Everyone.
And back in my day, there was
it's still your day, babe. It's still your day.
To be determined. But, you know, when there wasn't social media, suffice it to say, I think social media has kind of put everybody in a position of being vulnerable to attack and criticism and the kind of meanness that really only celebrities used to get in that way, or like public figures. And now the internet has opened that up to everybody. It's a little bit scary. I always wonder what is the long-term impact of this on our psyche?
I mean, that's kind of the scariest part, isn't it? Is that when you say even being in the public eye, but it's like, doesn't everyone kind of feel like they're in the public eye now more in that way? Because everyone, you feel that people are watching all the time. I mean, that's kind of what I thought about, like, especially becoming famous or whatever, or having people watch you. Is I was like, wait, this is real life paranoia. You're putting yourself out to be constantly like, people are looking for you, trying to find you, watch you, talk about you. And you're like, wait, that's literally sounds like the epitome of driving yourself insane. But now that's the way it is with everyone. Any kid that has a phone and has some sort of presence on social media, it's like, well, then isn't that kind of the same thing? Because I don't know how long I've now had Instagram, a long, long time. It kind of, you go into the extreme of it, but then you also kind of just start rejecting it a little bit in a way. And I wonder, how does it get worse? Like, when I say worse, how does it, is it going to get more? I don't understand. Or is it going to go back?
I don't think we all, not any of us know, we're kind of in this nascent phase of this whole new fangled world.
Let's take a quick break to talk about one of our partners.
From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes a new movie called Challengers, starring Zendaya, Josh O'Connor, and Mike Feist. Zendaya plays Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy turned coach who transforms her husband, Art, into a world-famous Grand Slam champion. To jolt her husband out of his recent losing streak, she makes him play a challenger event, close to the lowest level of the pro tournament. Her strategy takes a turn when Art finds himself standing across a net from his former best friend and Tashi's former boyfriend, Patrick. Tensions run high as past and present collide. Tashi must ask herself, what will it cost to win? See Challengers only in theaters April 26. Get tickets now at challengersmovie.com.
Okay, let's get back to the conversation. One of the things that I really want to ask you about. So at Goop, we're very into
female. I'm such a big fan. I love Goop so much. I just love it so much. And the articles and everything. It's just, I love you. I think you're amazing.
Thank you. So then you'll know that we're big proponents of completely fulfilled female sexuality. Like, We talk about it a lot. We got in trouble for it when we first started talking about it. Orgasm equality and vibrators and fantasies and everything.
But I do think you paved the way for that and the fact. I mean, did you ever think that you were going to get in trouble for stuff like that? Or because maybe you were like the kind of pioneers in a way of talking about that kind of stuff?
There was no pattern recognition in the beginning of what we would get. Right. Shit for and what we couldn't, like, sometimes it would be something that we didn't even write about or didn't even say, and sometimes it would be something that seemed so innocuous, and sometimes we'd be like, wow, this is really, we're dropping a bomb here and no one even, you know, noticed. So in terms of, I was really fascinated by how much pushback we got around talking about female sexuality and how people went after us for it in the beginning. But I started to realize very quickly, like, this is just what we do. We're whacking through the brush and we're going to get scraped up and that's okay. And it's because it's so important. And I think without a fulfilling sexual existence, like, women are, we're sexual beings and we're also intellectuals or entrepreneurs or whatever. Like, we are all sexual beings, men and women.
Multifaceted. Like, yeah, totally.
So I thought it was a really important thing to talk about because I think it affects mood and health and all kinds of things. So when I saw you were doing, tell me about Laura DiCarlo, because when I saw that you were doing that, I thought it was very intriguing.
Yeah, I mean, well, I've always been a bit of, so Laura DiCarlo, it's, so I've just now partnered with them or co-founded. DiCarlo is a female-led kind of sex tech company, basically, which there were kind of, I always was very interested in this market. And as anyone can kind of attest to, growing up in kind of a repressed, well, English people, I think anyone, in terms of like sex education and talking about love or sex or any of those things, it just doesn't happen. You don't learn about it. And looking back on my sex education, it's ridiculous. It's so bad how badly education was at that time and kind of maybe still is, because it's so much deeper than just the anatomy and the science behind it, because there is so much to do with the emotional and also the self-discovery of what sex is to yourself, to the wellness of it, to your own body. And I think the stigma behind pleasuring yourself or loving yourself. And I think women are also taught to be there's so much shame behind having a vagina, right? And also being scared about what that is. There's just so much behind it, which is kind of generational. It's like within terms of like generational trauma, especially like in terms of culture. And it was just really important for me to kind of take away the stigma of not just sex toys or pleasure, but just talking about the communication behind it, women talking about those sort of things, especially when you start talking about assault or anything. I think especially when kind of like Harvey Weinstein and all that stuff started happening, I remember talking to a close group of friends of mine and realizing how much that had happened to everyone there, every single person. And obviously with sex, that becomes the joy and the wonderful thing behind it and pleasuring yourself. But then also there's a lot to do in terms of the other way. There's just a lot of work to be done. And just to be able to, when it's not just about sex with your partner or whether that's a man or a woman or whoever, or however you identify, but it's to be in a relationship and to have sex with yourself. That's the most important thing, to be able to just enjoy yourself, to be attracted to yourself. What about you turns you on to yourself? Not what you have to do for anyone else, whatever that means. And it really started, I became friends with someone. Do you know who Esther Perel is?
Yeah, of course. Okay, she's a good friend of ours at Goop.
Yeah, right. So she's a friend of mine as well. And I really learning about her story and how, and obviously hers is more to do with kind of relationships and stuff like that. But we would have these long, long, in-depth chats about kind of relationships, but also kind of always went back to the relationship with yourself. She's one of the most incredible women, but it really started on a journey that obviously with Laura DiCarlo was a really incredible one. She's incredible, but also taking away the thing of it being a sex toy and really making it sex tech and really enjoying all these things and products. Because especially when I started doing that, I started having conversations about sex and experiences and things with guys, especially as well, talking about men and their relationship with sex and the reason why they did certain things was because they got hurt at a certain point. And there were so many interesting, now I get to have all these incredible conversations because everyone's just so much more open to it and talking about it. I don't know, the last time I came from a meeting with Laura DiCarlo, I came back and I had a small dinner with people who I were living in my house, and we were all boys and girls, and we were all just talking openly about sex for hours, and it never happened. And all the guys are sitting there going, we never talk about this stuff. It's so crazy. And it got quite emotional as well, because it's not just a physical, it's so much deeper than that. But I'm so happy to be working with Laura.
So, I mean, do you, given your openness about your life and then seeing how many young people look up to you and affiliate with you, like, does it make you feel like you have a responsibility to open doors for the next generations? Like, how do you perceive that, your role?
I think about them in terms of, I do feel a responsibility, but more that I feel a responsibility to try and, when you talk about being authentic, it's quite a hard thing, especially now in this day and age, because to be authentic is almost impossible in a way. To be truly authentic, especially in this job, I feel like it's my responsibility to work on myself and to be better for myself to be able to help others. Mm-hmm. Before I was trying to help people, but actually I was destroying myself in the process, if that makes sense. And I did always feel a responsibility when I was younger to kind of see the way that the world was and to somehow leave it better in some way, shape or form. And for me, especially in terms of the LGBTQ community and being a queer person, which also when I say queer, I always kind of, if I have to label it, it always changes in terms of my sexuality. So it's always constantly changing, which is always quite fun or quite stressful. I can't really decide. But I do definitely feel to be as genuine and to be as open and to be as vulnerable as possible, but to also, the only reason why I've been able to do what I've done is because people have paved the way for me. So to also be appreciative and talk about people that have inspired me to get to where I am and be able to kind of step out with the person that I love and be very open,
who are love and support. That you feel like have paved, helped pave the way?
That's quite difficult because for me specifically growing up, I didn't know, I kind of grew up in, I wouldn't say homophobic, I would say more like quite an old-fashioned household, let's say, in terms of not, I didn't know anyone who was gay or who, I didn't know that was a thing. And actually, I think growing up, I was quite, not noticeably, or I wasn't knowledgeable of the fact that I was probably quite homophobic, but the idea of being same sex, anything, I was disgusted by that in myself. I was like, oh my God, oh I would never, that's disgusting. Oh, that's so gay. And so learning and growing up and realizing that maybe I had a best friend when I was a kid who actually I liked more than they liked me, but not realizing that that's what that was. But then the shame and the self-hatred, and I do kind of correlate the kind of massive depression and the suicidal kind of moments of my life because I was so ashamed of ever being that, but actually that was the part of me that I love so much and accept and still getting to terms with, if that makes sense, because there is still a part of me where I'm like, I wish I could just be straight. There is still that side to it. It's really complicated, but I do think that when I was younger, before I kind of knew any of these kind of big gay icons or people in my life even who are gay, I really attest the people that paved the way for me with the people that I fell in love with, those people, those relationships that I had, and also the people that the relationships or quote unquote experiences, whether they were sexual or not, they were also with people who weren't necessarily openly gay either. It was kind of more of like a self-discovery and just being like, oh, it's not because you're a woman, it's just because I love you. Or like, it's just, it was more simple than that behind the label.
I think it's incredibly inspiring because although it's hard to see what you're doing when you're doing it, brought this incredible acceptance around it to, you know, my kids are completely, they're not being raised with any of that. And they seek also, you know, internally within the household, but then they also see culturally, externally, that anything they want to be is okay and acceptable. And you're a big part of that. So last question, because we're going to run out of time. You have a long, productive, amazing life ahead of you. And I can't wait to see what you do with it. But if I ask you, what is the thing that you've accomplished? It could be tiny. It could be professional, personal, you know, interpersonal, professional, that you have accomplished that you're most proud of.
Why do I want to cry when you say that? I find that so hard. It's still, I think, especially after this year and how much the world has just gone through so much and really having to take a step back and slow down and realizing what's important and realizing that work, because to me, everyone's had a really hard year. I've had a really difficult year, but without work, what it is, who am I? If I like, because for me in the beginning, it was like, oh my God, without work, what? I'm nothing. I'm worthless. I have nothing. I don't know what to do without that. And it's not just the work, taking away the work. And it was the kind of remembering what it is that I love to do. And I think to be able to have had this platform and this voice and to have helped people, like specifically, like there are fans that I have that I can have very close relationships with and talk to, but just to be able to have these kind of relationships and people from around the world, cross cultures, cross ages, but girls and boys, where I've been able to kind of help people in a way, or give people a sense that, oh my God, if you can get through that, if you can do that, if you can stand up to those people and be who you are, then I have a chance too. And I get constantly people, especially now, being like, I've come out to my parents and they've kicked me out of my house and I don't know what to do, you know, and it's quite a big undertaking, but also all I'm trying to do is be a kind of, look, if I can do it, you can do it. As long as I can find happiness, then you can as well. And obviously I think that's probably been my most proud moment, is being able to stand up and just be like, this is who I am. If you like it, take it or leave it, but I'm happy in myself, because I wasn't for such a long time.
Well, you are such an incredibly beautiful person. And you're not so bad looking, but you're very beautiful on the inside. And I thank you so much for being here with me today. This was wonderful. Thank you so much for listening to my conversation with Cara Delevingne. Be sure to check out the 5-day workout series we're doing with Cara. It is live on March 22nd. And if you'd like to see some of the pieces in Cara's new collection with Puma, head to our shop at goop.com. That's a wrap on today's episode. If you have a second, please rate, review, and hit subscribe if you haven't already. Don't forget to share the Goop podcast with a friend. And in the meantime, for more, you can check out goop.com/thepodcast.